I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
It's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of them.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government. Since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Thursday, June 20th, 2023 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It is a wild and dystopic ride, to be sure. I'm your host, Chris Hinckley, and we are all Road Warriors, those who would esteem ourselves to be. While we still have road and the ability to warrior. So, how wild and dystopic, and you know, how do we describe it? Well, I have a comparison in mind, I suppose. The Bible says that we should train a child up in the way he should go, and when he is older, he will not depart from it. And I've mentioned a time or two that Benjamin Franklin observed that only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt, ambitious, they have more need of masters. And it's interesting that we used to train a child up in the way he should go, generally, in the short span of about one or two generations, we have flipped the raising of children. What we used to do is train children from a very early age, and then gradually, you know, it was hands-on from an early age, and then gradually hands-off. And now that has been reversed. You can see children everywhere. As one gentleman put it recently, concerning one particular child, he probably missed a butt warming or two, is the way that it was put. So now we see a lot of that, hands off from a very early age, and then hands on throughout the later years. It's been reversed, but it's not parents that are hands on in later years. It's the system, its government, its Bernaysian social engineering, it's the coercive influence and force of the communitarian bent. It's those kinds of things. And increasingly, we are drifting away from our roots, and it's very unfortunate to see. And so what's interesting is you can see in that period that we have lost the influence of family and tradition. People have lost their roots. They have no compass or direction, which is interesting. Sort of reminds me of the letter that Albert Pike wrote to Giuseppe Mazzini, dated August 15, 1871, that most people should be familiar with, but most have never heard of. So there's a vacuum that is created when you do that. At an early age, if you train the child up in the way he should go, then he has those roots. He has those moorings, and he understands right and wrong. He has a compass, if you will. But if that is removed, and we raise a child with cybernetic conditioning, the Dr. Spock cybernetic feedback loop, you know, give him positive feedback and negative feedback. Those Skinner box feedback loops, basically we reduce the child and the person to an automaton who is then dependent upon those feedback loops for direction and guidance, not the moorings, the traditional moorings that we used to be brought up with. And so it's interesting, you know, when that vacuum is created, then the person is constantly looking and searching for, it's like they go hand in hand. That vacuum lends itself to a society that is sort of led by the nose in Bernaysian fashion, that has to be propagandized, that has to be socially engineered and influenced, and doesn't realize how dangerous that is. And how sad, really, because it's a very empty sort of existence. No traditions, no guiding influence from youth and family and perhaps even community, like local community. Not communitarian type influence. And that's just very tragic and unfortunate. So this is the society we find ourselves in today. It is, I would say, in a very real sense, Bertrand Russell's scientific dictatorship. So that's the hard reality of where we are in America today, unfortunately. And when we get here, I talked about a couple of things recently. Something that just keeps sticking in the front of my mind is this contrast between Christianity and communism, and that communism is just simply the counterfeiting of the Acts chapter 2 Pentecostal moment. It's communism is Christianity just without God, which obviously is an oxymoron. Or, you know, not the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not the God of Exodus chapter 20. And since we have drifted and lost those moorings in one or two generations that I mentioned, we don't remember. We think we're Americans. What does that mean? As I've mentioned recently, we have these founding documents, but who could quote from them? Who could quote you anything from the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, or the First Ten Amendments, known as the Bill of Rights? Who could tell you why we have a Bill of Rights. And for that matter, we say we're a Christian nation, or we were founded as a Christian nation, but who could recite to you, speaking of Exodus 20, who could name any one of the Ten Commandments? And the irony of that is, I've mentioned lately, the question for folks in particular, really for everyone, but especially for folks who consider themselves Christians, the question is, who's in charge? Who decides? It's a two-part question. Who's in charge? Who decides? And the irony of that question is, for a society that would consider itself, or a town or a church or whatever that would consider itself Christian, that has lost sight of the Ten Commandments, the question, who's in charge, who decides, correlates directly to the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And so this is the ironic state of our society. Now, we don't know who we are. We don't know what we believe or why. And therefore, because we have been reduced to a mere tabula rasa, now the new message is constantly being imprinted. I mean, we saw that really. We saw it after September 11, 2001, obviously. There were things waiting in the wings, mostly governmental, some extra-governmental, obviously. But I would say predominantly governmental. Now, after COVID, the things that we've been seeing are largely extra-governmental that were prepared at places like Davos, at the World Economic Forum, and so forth. And it's not even much of a secret anymore. And so we're coming up on election season. I've talked many times about Chapter 10 of Friedrich Hayek's The Road to Serfdom, Why the Worst Get on Top. I think maybe I'll read a little bit from that chapter, and hopefully you will see what I mean. People that have been reduced in this fashion to input-output mechanisms in a cybernetic feedback loop, neural nets and all that kind of nonsense, are obviously particularly susceptible to this. And if the social fabric is not strong, then, and even when it is, ironically, these bad things can happen. But when it's not strong, I think it's easier for these things to happen. But even when it is strong, I mean, I've read from Stephen Ambrose's Band of Brothers, I think, was the last book that I read from. Christopher Browning's Ordinary Men, and other books that talk, Ambrose's Band of Brothers, though, and Browning's Ordinary Men, but Ambrose's Band of Brothers in particular, he talks about how the small communities were they were fairly tightly knit, and still things, terrible things happen. So without further ado, a bit from Hayek's Road to Serfdom. So chapter 10, Why the Worst Get on Top, he opens with the quote from Lord Acton, power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And Hayek writes, we must now examine a belief from which many who regard the advent of totalitarianism as inevitable derive consolation, and which seriously weakens the resistance of many others who would oppose it with all their might if they fully apprehended its nature. It is the belief that the most repellent features of the totalitarian regimes are due to the historical accident that they were established by groups of blackguards and thugs. Surely, it is argued, if in Germany the creation of a totalitarian regime brought the Strikers, Killingers, the Leys, the Heinz, the Himmlers, the Heydrichs to power, this may prove the viciousness of the German character, but not that the rise of such people is the necessary consequence of a totalitarian system. Why should it not be possible that the same sort of system, if it be necessary to achieve important ends, be run by decent people for the good of the community as a whole? Isn't that the message that we hear from just about every quarter these days? And, you know, for that matter, the ESG message is that everybody's, we are all hearing from every corporate quarter that we all need to do our part, you know, to save the environment, even though engineering products that wear out almost immediately and they get thrown away, and an economy that is forcing big box stores to carry the entire item and carry less of the parts to fix items. Because if you think about it, the flooring cost of, you know, weed whacker line, for example, and parts for a weed whacker, your flooring cost on those, the benefits of just selling the entire weed whacker outweigh the flooring cost of all the parts. Simple terms. But, you know, is any of that good for the environment? The process to make an electric car is terrible for the environment, but you know what? No worries, right? So why should it not be possible that the same sort of system, if it be necessary to achieve important ends, remember the end justifies the means, dear comrade, but it doesn't. Why shouldn't it be run by decent people for the good of the community as a whole? We must not deceive ourselves into believing that all good people must be Democrats or will necessarily wish to have a share in the government. Many, no doubt, would rather entrust it to somebody whom they think more competent. And that's, you know, therein lies the rub in a democratic republic, so to speak. I mean, most people don't have the bombastic, pathological, narcissistic personality for politics. And so most would rather, by nature, entrust it to somebody whom they think more competent. And then there's, you know, there are other things, Dunning-Kruger, for example, and so on. Although this might be unwise, there is nothing bad or dishonorable in approving a dictatorship of the good. Totalitarianism, and, you know, that's a controversial statement, obviously. Totalitarianism, we can already hear it argued, is a powerful system alike for good and evil. And the purpose for which it will be used depends entirely on the dictators. And those who think that it is not the system which we need fear, but the danger that it might be run by bad men, might even be tempted to forestall this danger by seeing that it is established in time by good men. But again, back to Lord Acton's words, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Concentration of power corrupts over time absolutely. No doubt an American or English fascist system would greatly differ from the Italian or German models. No doubt. Maybe. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Democrats want to regulate the Supreme Court. I'm Peter Serafine with another Liberty Minute. So Democrat lawmakers want to regulate the Supreme Court, a separate and equal branch of government. As a constitutional originalist, I take issue with this concept as a whole, but as a human being with a little common sense, I take issue with the particulars. The U.S. Constitution gave Congress the authority to establish any necessary courts beneath the Supreme Court, but that's where congressional authority ends. The Senate Judiciary's Subcommittee on Federal Courts Oversight, Agency Action, and Federal Rights wants to mandate that justices recuse themselves if they have a financial connection to the case. Using that same logic, no member of Congress should ever be allowed to vote on any bill that they have a financial connection to. But if that were to happen, then how would Congress maintain their ability to become millionaires at a rate over 10 times higher than the rest of the population? Congress, regulate yourselves effectively, then maybe we can talk about allowing you to assume power over the only branch of government that ever keeps you in check at all. And if you own firearms, you need carry insurance. Get the most affordable carry insurance on the market, according to Pew Pew Tactical, and save 10% with the code LIGHTHOUSE at protectwithbear.com. Until next time, Sivis Pashem Parabellum.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Welcome back. So as Hayek writes in The Road to Serfdom, Chapter 10, Why the Worst Get on Top, no doubt an American or English fascist system would greatly differ from the Italian or German models. Hail Hydra. No doubt, if the transition were effected without violence. Now, tell me if any of this is ringing a bell. I digress. This has been almost 100 years. It's been about 80 years since Hayek wrote these words. No doubt, if the transition were effected without violence, we might expect to get a better type of leader. And if I had to live under a fascist system, I have no doubt, Hayek writes, that I would rather live under one run by Englishmen or Americans than under one run by anybody else. Yet, all this does not mean that, judged on our present standards, our fascist system would in the end prove so very different or much less intolerable than its prototypes. There are strong reasons for believing that what to us appear the worst features of the existing totalitarian systems are not accidental byproducts, but phenomena which totalitarianism is certain sooner or later to produce. Just as the democratic statesman who sets out to plan economic life will soon be confronted with the alternative of either assuming dictatorial powers or abandoning his plans, so the totalitarian dictator would soon have to choose between disregard of ordinary morals and failure. It is for this reason that the unscrupulous and uninhibited are likely to be more successful in a society tending toward totalitarianism. The unscrupulous and uninhibited. And that is dangerous. I mean, lawlessness, basically. And what did Jesus say in Matthew 24? Because of lawlessness, the love of many will grow cold. Who does not see this has not yet grasped the full width of the gulf which separates totalitarianism from a liberal regime. The utter difference between the whole moral atmosphere under collectivism and the essentially individualist Western civilization. But that Western civilization is kind of a myth. The Western individualist, the individualist Western civilization, and for that matter, the distinction between individualism and collectivism, I would argue, is a bifurcation fallacy that is along the lines of Ezra Pound's famous remark, you know, the technique of infamy is inventing two lies and getting you arguing heatedly over which one is true. Both individualism and collectivism are forms of worship of a false god. They are idolatry in contravention to the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. The individualist bent, you know, I would argue, pursues its own ends, the age of reason, and those kinds of things. It pursues its own ends rather than striving to worship its creator. That makes sense. And I can imagine that there are those who would argue and say, but Chris, you have actually said from Hayek's Road to Serfdom, chapter one, The Abandoned Road, Hayek says the essential features of that individualism, which from the elements provided by Christianity and the philosophy of classical antiquity, was first fully developed during the Renaissance and has since grown and spread into what we know as Western civilization, are the respect for the individual man qua man, that is, the recognition of his own views and tastes as supreme in his own sphere, however narrowly that may be circumscribed, and the belief that it is desirable that men should develop their own individual gifts and bents. And he continues on, freedom and liberty are now words so worn with use and abuse that one must hesitate to employ them to express the ideas for which they stood during that period. Tolerance is perhaps the only word which still preserves the full meaning of that principle, which during the whole of this period was in the ascendant and which only in recent times has again been in decline, to disappear completely with the rise of the totalitarian state. So Hayek says, the gradual transformation of a rigidly organized hierarchic system into one where men could at least attempt to shape their own life, where man gained the opportunity of knowing and choosing between different forms of life, is closely associated with the growth of commerce. Anyway, so he is talking about this society, but what is man actually pursuing in that society? Is he stick around, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendovite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendovite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and Extendovite is all natural. Extendovite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendovite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you, and in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Welcome back. Bottom of the first hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Thursday, July 20th, 2023, and we're exploring how the worst get on top and what it means for a society. It's been an interesting ride over the last, say, 100 years. Throughout the 20th century, there was a phenomenon that R.J. Rummel coined as democide, or death by government. He actually wrote the book titled Death by Government. And there was an unprecedented number of folks who died at the hands of government, endorsed by people. Imagine that. And things continue on. For example, in otherwise peaceful states, in America, for instance, we have been murdering innocent unborn children wholesale for decades now. And there has been an outcry recently to preserve the right to murder innocent children. Think about what that means for a society. You know, when we have a society that has been so damaged psychically, perhaps, spiritually, that it would, its mothers and its women would clamor for the right to murder their own children. That, I think, is a horrifying prospect. And yet, that's, I mean, a society that would cheer for the right to do such a thing would be capable of any kind of horror, I think. So we're exploring why the worst get on top. Not how, but why. The chapter 10 of Hayek's Road to Serfdom is titled Why the Worst Get on Top. Why the Worst Get on Top. And so Hayek reminds us that there are strong reasons for believing that what to us appear the worst features of the existing totalitarian systems, as we look back now historically, this book was published in 1945, on the heels of World War II, reflecting really throughout the first half of the 20th century, and even before, you know, what gave rise to these systems. So Hayek reminds us there are strong reasons for believing that what to us appear the worst features of the existing totalitarian systems are not accidental byproducts, but phenomena which totalitarianism is certain sooner or later to produce. Just as the democratic statesman who sets out to plan economic life will soon be confronted with the alternative of either assuming dictatorial powers or abandoning his plans. And then what will people think of him? Oh, he's weak. He's ineffectual. He's not able to, you know, get things done. Just as a democratic statesman who sets out to plan economic life will soon be confronted with the alternative of either assuming dictatorial powers and becoming Gavin Newsom or abandoning his plans, so the totalitarian dictator would soon have to choose between disregard of ordinary morals and failure. Well, you know, in a Machiavellian power-evolving universe, one must gravitate toward the Nietzschean strategy that the end justifies the means, dear comrades, and might makes right. So you do what you got to do, right? You have to break a few eggs to make an omelet. Takes a few broken eggs to make an omelet. It is for this reason that the unscrupulous and uninhibited are likely to be more successful in a society tending toward totalitarianism. Who does not see this has not yet grasped the full width of the gulf which separates totalitarianism from a liberal regime, the utter difference between the whole moral atmosphere under collectivism and the essentially individualist Western civilization. The argument to make the nuanced distinction from what I was saying in the previous segment regarding this distinction that Hayek is making here between collectivism and the essentially individualist Western civilization, the point that he's making is that we respect the rights of the individual, but still, under what premise? And so that's why I say that the Christian mindset is particularly separate and distinct, unique in many regards, and I'm not going to dive down that rabbit hole right now. So continuing, the moral basis of collectivism, quote unquote, has of course been much debated in the past, but what concerns us here is not its moral basis, but its moral results. And I would say, if I were adding sort of my own marginal note, the question and what concerns me most, perhaps particularly as it relates to not its moral basis, but its moral results, is that two-part question: who's in charge? Who decides? Is collectivism bad? I don't know. Who's in charge? Who decides? The usual discussions of the ethical aspects of collectivism refer to the question whether collectivism is demanded by existing moral convictions, or what moral convictions would be required if collectivism is to produce the hoped-for results. And what Hayek starts to prove, essentially, is that in essence, collectivism is lazy, apathetic, irresponsible, and I would say morally haphazard, which ends in catastrophe. I think one of the most important arguments that he makes for individualism is personal responsibility and accountability, which again, gets right back to, I mean, you think about the way that every diverse group of mankind has been exploited scientifically, you know, the scientific engineering of exploitation of every group, you know, men and women, all races, all creeds, all this and that, over the last 100 years in particular, very scientifically. And every group is weaponized against the others precisely according to our nature. Our very nature has been weaponized against us, and we have been weaponized against ourselves and each other. It's fascinating to watch. But I digress. The usual discussions of the ethical aspects of collectivism refer to the question whether collectivism is demanded by existing moral convictions, or what convictions would be required if collectivism is to produce the hoped-for results. What I'm referring to in general, I suppose, you know, you look back at what was going on in the book of Exodus, for example, and how the people had a responsibility and an obligation individually. The Bible says we will all give account for ourselves. And, you know, Jesus even said, for every idle word. Which is interesting when we think that we are able to create with language in the likeness of God, in a sense. Our language and our words have creative power. We will give account for those things. So the people in Exodus, particularly around Exodus 20, did not want to have that personal accountability. When Moses says, let's go up on the mountain and talk to God, they say, you talk to us lest we perish. And most people want to abdicate their own personal responsibility in life. That too has been weaponized and exploited, and we are led to believe that it's anachronistic, and it's just it's an outmoded concept that you should take personal responsibility for yourself. Better to let the nanny state handle the tough things and the experts. Can anybody quote the Constitution today in America other than an immigrant who was tested on it? Most people say it, but I'm not a constitutional expert. Why would I do that? You should be. You should be. Our question, however, is what moral views will be produced by a collectivist organization of society? And what views are likely to rule it? The interaction between morals and institutions may well have the effect that the ethics produced by collectivism will be altogether different from the moral ideals that led to the demand for collectivism. You mean there might be a bait and switch? Who would do such a Machiavellian thing? Why, that would be, you know, that would be devious. And certainly these people with these high ideals would never do such a thing, right? The interaction between morals and institutions may well have the effect that the ethics produced by collectivism will be altogether different from the moral ideals that led to the demand for collectivism. While we are likely to think that since the desire for a collectivist system springs from high moral motives, such a system must be the breeding ground for the highest virtues, there is, in fact, no reason why any system should necessarily enhance those attitudes which serve the purpose for which it was designed. The ruling moral views will depend partly on the qualities that will lead individuals to success in a collectivist or totalitarian system, and partly on the requirements of the totalitarian machinery. The ruling moral views will depend partly on the qualities that will lead individuals to success in a collectivist or totalitarian system. And again, this is, you know, think about it. It's not right or wrong. What leads to success? What leads me to the most successful path? And partly on the requirements of the totalitarian machinery, all of which, both of which are, I would argue, very Machiavellian and very sinister in nature, ultimately. So Hayek says, we must here return for a moment to the position which precedes the suppression of democratic institutions and the creation of a totalitarian regime. You know, we folks who listen to this network, for example, for the last 25 or 30 years, have been arguing with friends, neighbors, coworkers, loved ones about the rise of a totalitarian structure that is, as Jordan Peterson put it in that interview with Jocko Willink, holographic in nature, if you will. It is it's been sort of superimposed on the traditional or the orthodox structure, for example, in America. We still have the, at least the illusion or the form of the three duly constituted branches, the executive, legislative, and judicial. We still have processes, but there is the extra, you know, the extra orthodox, the extra governmental almost, that reaches out into the private sector in fascist sort of form. Most notably, perhaps, the administrative agencies, the independent agencies. They're known as independent agencies in the administrative fourth branch, which is quasi-legislative, quasi-executive, they say, but it really encompasses all three of the duly constituted branches. And as folks like R.J. Pristrito have noted in Pristrito's The Birth of the Administrative State, Where It Came From and What It Means for Limited Government, many times it consolidates all of those powers in not just one agency, but one individual or one position. So we must here for return for a moment to the position which precedes the suppression of democratic institutions in the creation and the creation of a totalitarian regime. In this stage that precedes all of that, you know, what we saw during COVID, for example, what precedes what happens in COVID, what precedes the next wave of what comes that was worse than what we saw during COVID. We'll discuss that when we come back. Stick around.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Subscribe to the Freedom Times monthly newspaper, published since 1985. That's right, 1985. The Freedom Times pulls no punches and observes no sacred cows or taboos. The perilous times we live in are too critical for anything but honest discussion of America's plight. The Freedom Times is the antidote to the lies and distortions of the fake news media. There's no better way to inform and enlighten Americans than by reading the Freedom Times each month. New subscribers may sign up at the special rate of just $29 for 1 year or $55 for 2 years. Subscribe online by going to AmericanFreedomNews.us or mail your subscription to The Freedom Times, P.O. Box 218, Wildwood, Pennsylvania, 15091. That's The Freedom Times, P.O. Box 218, Wildwood, Pennsylvania, 15091. Support America's best patriotic newspaper and one of the very few left by becoming a subscriber to The Freedom Times today.
When you were here before, you couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You flow like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so very special. But I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo.
Welcome back. Final segment of the first hour of today's broadcast. So our question, however, is what moral views will be produced by a collectivist organization of society, or what views are likely to rule it? Hayek says, the interaction between morals and institutions may well have the effect that the ethics produced by collectivism will be altogether different from the moral ideals that led to the demand for collectivism. While we are likely to think that since the desire for a collectivist system springs from high moral motives, or at least that's what we're always told, right? And you got to have a good sales pitch. And, you know, there are always people who are arguing or asking the question, if it's so great, why is it being forced down our throat? If it was so great, wouldn't we all gravitate to it? Not necessarily. While we're likely to think that since the desire for a collectivist system springs from high moral motives, such a system must be the breeding ground for the highest virtues, there is in fact no reason why any system should necessarily enhance those attitudes which serve the purpose for which it was designed. The ruling moral views will depend partly on the qualities that will lead individuals to success in a collectivist or totalitarian system, and partly on the requirements of the totalitarian machinery. But again, notice that the requirements are devoid of moral compass, particularly a sense of right and wrong. We must here for a moment return to the position which precedes the suppression of democratic institutions and the creation of a totalitarian regime. In this stage, it is the general demand for quick and determined government action that is the dominating element in the situation. Dissatisfaction with the slow and cumbersome course of democratic procedure, which makes action for action's sake the goal. And, well, let me just continue for a moment. It is then the man or the party who seems strong and resolute enough to get things done who exercises the greatest appeal. We were told historically, we were reminded historically, that government by emergency is dangerous because emergencies are not, when you are in a state of crisis or emergency, you do not think creatively. It reduces critical thinking and problem solving and creativity almost to the point of elimination, if not elimination. And it's, you know, more of, it lends itself to anxiety-driven decisions that are not good long-term decisions. You do things you wouldn't otherwise do. The famous, you know, opportunities of crisis, Rahm Emanuel is the quote that we remember. We play that quote from time to time here, Rahm Emanuel. You know, an opportunity to do things you think you could not do before. But that means somebody is waiting for an opportunity. We've played the clip of Angus Bergen imagining a new moral economy. Same kind of thing. These all parallel the discussion that Hayek was offering us back in 1945. So we'll continue, and we will get to the three main reasons, Hayek's three main reasons why the worst get on top. That really is kind of the central point that I would like to make. So we'll do that in the second hour, coming up right after this short break. Stick around, we'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.